Isaac Rankin, a young up-and-comer with the game on his boot. He hardly any time left after it. Rankin, he won't score. What about the contest here? Men come from everywhere. Lemons run down from behind by Gleeson. Ellis needs to score. Smothered. What a smother by McGrath. Oh. 3 seconds. You reckon the siren's going to beat everyone? It does. Ripping game of football. Ends in just the second draw of this season.
Beautiful drama last night at Metricon Stadium, Gold Coast and Essendon with a 79-point draw, in fact, it was. And beautiful call by Howie there on Fox Sports, Fox Footy. And he often rides shotgun with the great Brad Johnson on Fox Sports, who joins us as part of the team on a Thursday. Good morning, Jono.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. How are you guys?
We're going very well. A little bit of drama for your man, Howie, last night in that game. Sorry, it was 73, 11-7, 73.
He calls really well, Howie, and I've loved working with him this year. And look, he got the excitement building up thanks to Essendon getting back into the game in the second half, which was good to watch. And look, in the end, how exciting were? I don't know why I was cheering for Gold Coast. Maybe because it was Ben King and the way that he picked up that ball, and this guy's 200 centimetres, and maybe even before that last goal that he did kick, he was on half back and he contested, picked up the ball, handball. And then he took off forward, nearly took a mark inside forward 50. And I think Jordan Lewis picked it up and went, wow, look at this guy, 200, late in the game, doing what he's doing athletically. And then he clips the ball, picks it up off the ground and kicks an absolute ripper, breaking through a couple of Essendon opponents. And then he had the missed opportunity as well. Then it goes down to Rankin. So it was what an exciting finish. And you got to take your hat off to Zaharakis as well, boys. He kicked a couple of late ones. Tore his quad mid-kick as well to kick a goal. So it just had drama, but it had excitement. And it was a good finish to the game.
So I'm going to ask both of you. Did Isaac Rankin do the right thing? He's taken a mark just outside the 50 with about 45 seconds to go. And he ices the game in the sense that means Essendon can't win, but he turned his back on play and backed himself into either score or at least get it deep enough for it to be knocked through for a rush behind. Did he do the right thing?
Stand by, Jono. Don't answer that just yet. Don't answer that. I want to hear from Stuart Dew first, the coach of the Gold Coast Suns, on that situation.
That's cheating.
No. I want to give Brad the chance to listen to the coach and then shape his answer on the back of that.
The message was get it, next score wins, get it as close as possible. Whether to have a shot, we knew the time. Have a shot and get it to the line, see if we could get over the line. And he certainly tried that, but a lot of times when guys try that, they hook it. So, but again, to be in that situation, wins a one-on-one, got a bit of a look at it and didn't come off. If he played on straight away and kicks a point, they've got to look at that 30 seconds, which is it was a concern given the way they were moving the ball. So certainly think it was the right call to basically be, it's either a draw or we win. But the right call was to have a shot because I think there was probably 17 players inside 50, so good luck passing it.
Stuart, you after the game, Jono, in regards to Isaac Rankin's situation, what's your take on it, Jono?
Great assessment there from Stuart Dew. I was thinking exactly the same thing. Like he would have backed himself into at least get it to a few metres out from goal, I would have thought, with a kick from, 50. The man on the mark was right on 50, so he's kicking from 55. So, look, he just overkicked it, and he tried, to launch it through, which he had every right to do as well, but he just overkicked it and hooked it on that occasion. Stuart Dew, being the coach that he has, and he is that, he would have identified that the time in game, he would have had the message out. He was pretty close to the bench, as in Isaac Rankin, so he would have been getting messages in terms of time left in the game when he did take that mark. So I think he made the right call. Go back. He still gave them, get that ball to the line, let it fight for 10 seconds before a score, potentially. It just didn't work out that way for him. So I think I would have done the same thing. I think in that situation, the forward 50 was pretty clogged up. I think Whitey with about 40 players, 36 players down there. So I just added another 4 players onto the field, by the way. When I said that. 36 players in the forward 50. So it was pretty clogged up. I think he made the right call. He just miskicked it. If he had got it to that goal line, no doubt the bigs down there would have got it over the line.
I agree. At the time, because he looked back at the bench and got the time. He got some information from the bench, which I imagine would have been the time, because that's what they do at those junctures in the games. All he needed to do was get it to the goal square. What's that?
They hold the signs up as well on the bench. Yes. Minutes ago, 30 seconds. Yeah,
they do. All he had to do was get it to the goal square, and it would have been fisted through, but he just hooked it a bit. And what he did, as Stewie Jew rightly says, what he did was take out the third option, take out the third result. It was either going to be a draw or the Gold Coast were going to win. By eating up the 30 seconds, which still I think is the right play, and I'd do exactly the same thing if I was him. Eat the 30, try and get it to the goal line, or kick it through if you can, and win by a point. That's what I would have done.
The barrel half? Where is the barrel? We need to bring back the barrel.
No, you don't get the, I don't think you get license to kick the barrel until the siren rings, Jono, because if that goes pear-shaped, and you could have just kicked it to the top of the screen and get it punched through, I think that's when you come under. That's when you come under.
If he shanked it on the full half, who cares? Like, let's just have a crack at the barrel. Like, I think it's a kick in the game that just needs to come back more often. We're seeing it a little bit off half back. Boys will just launch it now, but nah, having a shot from 55. Let's start campaigning that. I reckon.
Well, knowing Isaac, I'm surprised he didn't try the inside out torpedo or the check side or something.
Did you see the dribble kick he tried running inside 50 in the last quarter?
Yes.
You are right, mate.
The interesting thing about him, though, Jono, is that it's now the third time he's had an opportunity to win the game, essentially, the go-ahead goal late in the match for the Suns. Now, unfortunately for Isaac, three times he hasn't been able to do it. But the reality is, though, he's getting himself in those positions. And you kind of feel like he's the one that actually does at least want the ball in his hands. And I reflect back on last week in the Essendon Giants game where McDonald, Tip and Woody, who I still think is the best kick in Essendon's team, rather than take the responsibility from 48 metres out, he passed it into the pocket to McKernan rather than taking the shot himself. Now, McDonald, Tip and Woody is a much better kick than McKernan, but McDonald, Tip and Woody didn't want to take the kick. At least with Isaac, he took the mark and straight away he didn't panic. Now, I don't think he should have turned his back on the play necessarily, but at least he didn't panic and go, geez, I've got to give it to someone else. He was able to take on the responsibility. And the other part of that phase of the play half, and Jono, was the smother from McGrath, which is quite extraordinary.
Well, the chase down tackle from... Who was it? Zirk Thatcher, was it the tackle that should have been given a free kick for holding the ball?
On Lemons,
There were some big moments in that last little bit. I mean, Jono referenced before Ben King's mark. I mean, that transition from the behind, from the Gold Coast, when Dylan Shield kicked the go-ahead point with about a minute and a half to go, whatever it might have been, that transition from one end to the other, Jono, was quite ridiculous. And it came on the back of, and this, I must admit, as a coach, it drives me bananas the way that teams get to that position. They're a point down or it's a tie with not long to go from a kick-in. And they just go long to the numbers. And the number of times that comes off, I reckon, is absolutely not worth doing. Because if you can find a target from that situation at 40, between 40 and 50, someone will roll off and give you a little window to hit that 40, 50-metre target. Then they can go and they've broken that congestion. They've broken the line of where the big hub of players is going to be. And then you might be able to get the ball in transition. And their ability to go coast to coast was fantastic in that situation. Then Ben King gets a chance to win it. So there was a couple of big moments offensively from the Gold Coast Suns, but also defensively, as you say, with the Bombers to save that last score so they at least got something out of it.
That was Jack Lukosius, wasn't it, that kick in from full back? Yep. I think he hits Miller up, who turns and goes.
Yeah.
Yep. Lukosius, he set himself up to go long, and I think that was the outlet. But just with the... I know he's only a young man in the game, but his composure to identify Miller at 50 and then allow that transition to happen was pretty classy from Lukosius. I think his kicking this year has gone to the level we all expect as a player. I think his first year in the competition or so just really turned a lot of ball over, trying to hit the darts all the time. And now he's just got really that perfect touch, and his kicking's gone to a really top end level, and that's what's allowed Gold Coast to get a lot better transition out of the back half of the ground.
So we look at the Suns now at the moment, guys. They've played in three games where it's been 6 points or less. the final result, and they've got a draw and two losses. So the Bulldogs, they lost by 5 points, St Kilda by 4 points, and then that draw. Whereas from an Essendon perspective, they obviously had that narrow loss last week against the Giants. But they're a bit the same. They lost to Carlton by a point when Townsend just fell short against the Blues, and then that four-point result to the Giants. But they have had three wins, 6 points, 6 points, and 3 points, and then that draw. So that is six games where they've been involved in a result, 6 points or less. That's incredible. Wow.
That is incredible. That's unbelievable how that's happened. And look, Essendon's still got the game up their sleeve. That's why games like last night that you'd expect Essendon to probably just get the points and walk away with. That's where, you know, one win in the last five and a draw for the Bombers, that with that game in hand, that last night was really important, I think, in terms of where they needed to go this year with that extra game that they have got.
So I've got another question for both of you. Now, I want to preface these comments by saying that Essendon last night had out Hurley, Hooker, Heppel, Danaher, Stringer and Fantasia. So that's six of their best or most experienced players that didn't play last night. So we keep talking about Collingwood's injury crisis, but that's significant from an Essendon perspective. So they did at least get a draw out of it. But what I don't understand, and a lot of Essendon supporters don't understand, why they don't go quicker more often. They got the lead against the Giants by playing quick. They got back from an 18-point deficit to hit the front in the last quarter playing quick. Why don't they do it more often?
Well, it's right across the whole competition, I think, Whitey. You see sides that find themselves under pressure. They play quick and they play a better brand of football. It's the forwards love fluency in the game. Stop-start football, it makes it extremely difficult when you get forward of centre because the opposition have got time to set up defensively. And as a forward, you're either getting caught up the ground or you're not able to, or when you do reset, you're up against four or five opposition players. Quick footy allows the forward half of the ground to actually activate more effectively. So that's why. And Essendon have got a really dynamic forward half off the ground. We saw it again last night in the last quarter when they do get going, or in the second half in particular, when they do get going, the flow that allows some of their players like Tippin Woody and even Parrish when he's forward of the ball to use it well. Langford comes into the game more. Zara Rakas comes into the game more. Otherwise, these guys go cold from a Bombers point of view. So if they're going cold, it's really difficult to then get back into the contest, back into the game. So that suits the Bombers, but it suits most of the best teams in the competition this year play with some sort of speed more often than not. And I think that's why we're enjoying watching those teams, because it's exciting to watch, but it allows the players to play to their best position, their best level, because they're getting more looks at it, better looks at it.
And I'm more convinced than ever, Whitey, that what we have been talking about, and Jimmy's been on about on a Monday with us, and you've been mentioning lots through the year, more than ever, it's just stay within arm's reach. Stay within arm's length of the opposition through the game, and then if you need to crank it up later on, you can crank it up. That's seemingly what's happening night in, night out. Through the Festival of Football, I've been able to focus on this a bit, and I reckon that's more than likely what's happening.
But what I don't disagree with that, but what I don't understand is that one of Essendon's great strengths is their speed. You know, they're a fairly small team, particularly through the midfield, but they've got players that can really move the ball quickly. Now, for whatever reason, and I think it's because Connor wants to play forward, but Connor McKenna's playing forward. He should be behind the ball. And him and Saad, and, you know, get that run going and the run through the midfield with the players they've got. But it's like they're trying to play a game, a conservative game, to stay in it. But they're taking away their great strength, and I just don't understand that.
And I think the players that they bring back in will be strong over the next few weeks. Of course, that'll help their lineup and structure, and allow maybe a bit more fluency in it, because you know that Hooker or Hurley are going to take that intercept mark, and then you can release from that a little bit quicker than maybe what we're seeing at the moment. I know Ridley's doing really well in that role, but outside of that, their intercept marks are right down because their two bigs aren't there defensively.
Mm. Yeah, they're a funny team, the Bombers. And they've clearly got a lot of, as you mentioned, Whitey, a lot of key players out, which makes a massive difference. And we have referenced the Magpie situation and how challenging their time is at the moment in the water footy. But they are a fascinating team, full stop, I reckon, the Bombers, with how they go about things. The form ladder Has the missing, Whitey?
Well, I think the interesting thing about that, you know, in the form ladder is, yes, they got 2 points. I think that's a handy 2 points because they didn't have a good percentage anyway. And Collingwood is the other team that has that draw, and you throw Richmond in as well if you like, because Essendon now are only just behind those teams with a game in hand. So that wasn't a good result for Collingwood last night that Essendon at least got 2 points. So rather than be 6 points ahead, they're only 4 points ahead, which obviously is only a game. So Collingwood's got a much better percentage than Essendon, but I think that 2 points for Essendon will be as... will essentially be a win for them going into the last 6 or 7 games.
Do you think?
I do, because of their percentage. Because yeah, if they were sort of up against 4 other teams on the same points, they're a game behind.
Yeah, no, but doesn't the fact that Collingwood has got that situation as well with the half game sort of take that out a little bit?
Well, look, that advantage? Potentially, yes. Potentially. But I think 2 points is better than no points, is probably my point.
For them, it probably is. Yes, I agree with that. For them, yeah, it probably is. Jono, we're seeing some the good football being really good, and we've talked about that through the years, that when the good teams play, it's a great contest, and when the average teams play, it's a little bit I could probably watch something else until the last quarter if I need to. which team is, obviously, Port Adelaide are sitting on top of the ladder, and we're going to speak to Ollie Wines later on after 8 o'clock. Which team has sort of impressed you the most with a sustainable style of football that will stand up in finals? Because a lot of talk about Port and Brisbane, I mean, we know West Coast ability, particularly at home. The Tigers are always a threat come the end of the season. Then there's the Cats. Is there one that stands out for you at the moment?
Oh, look, you can't go past what West Coast are doing at home at the minute. Their form away in the hub compared to what we're seeing now is miles apart, and but in a positive way for what we're seeing at the moment. It's dynamic footy. Nick Natanui is absolutely flying in the middle of the ground. You know, he's got the flip of the flopper, the show stopper, and the over the topper absolutely flying at the moment. So their midfield has really hit their straps. But that's what it is for the West Coast Eagles. I think their midfield's their strength point, and if they manage to keep that flowing, then that's going to be of the sides you mentioned. Then West Coast, yes. Richmond, we know what they can produce, but the Brisbane Lions are the ones that are really interesting watch, I think, at the moment, because you know Eric Hipwood kicks a 5 last week against the Bulldogs, but has Eric Hipwood got it in him to do that more consistently so that they can become that extreme final threat at the end of the year? Their midfield strong, they've got stars in that area, their back half can get the job done. Forward half of the ground, I think, is the critical area outside, because if you lock away Charlie Cameron like Easton Wood did, where are the goals going to come from consistently for the Brisbane Lions? Hipwood stands up 1 week, can he keep doing that for the remainder of the season and have a belter of a second half? And Brisbane Lions nearly become favourite, I think, if he can do that. So that's the challenge for a side like the Brisbane Lions, who will get their home finals because of what's going on potentially. So that's I think they're the big watch for me in terms of what we will see come the latter part of this season.
The West Coast are interesting because they've got that. Actually, you talk about the game in hand for Essendon and Melbourne. We know that's right. They've only played the 10 games at the moment as well. The West Coast they're one of the six teams that have had a bye. So effectively, if they beat Hawthorn on whenever that is, that must be Sunday, I think it is. It is.
Yeah.
They're equal second, and with a decent percentage booster, they go to second.
That's an excellent point, Huff. That the game in hand that we keep talking about with Essendon and Melbourne's becoming less important because they're not getting the bye. So we're now seeing a situation where there's 8 or 9 teams that have had that one less game. So you're right, West Coast can push into the top 4, and with a good percentage, you think they're going to stay there. And interesting. It's good. At least we're not locked in with 8 teams, because we're seeing the teams, Jono, that can't make it now look a little bit dispirited. And it's not like, oh, you know, they've been in this hub for such a long time. You can just tell that there's a few teams that just want to get home. I'll just a message for those people that want to get home. You're not missing anything. You're probably better where you are than coming back home.
Yeah,
but there is that feel. You can just, yeah, the way that they're playing, we're going to get some blowouts towards the end of the year, I think.
Yeah, we will. But look, I've watched Freo live the last couple of weeks and done their games. And the change in dynamic in that side now, especially through the midfield, it's been exciting. You know, you've got Brayshaw, Chera, Sarong, who's had an unbelievable yep. 3 weeks of football. Like this young man has stood up against the best midfielders in the competition in terms of Geelong, Collingwood, and then Tommy Mitchell on the weekend as well. Like they would be extremely excited because what it's done, it's allowed Fife to go forward a little bit more now because they've got trust in these younger guys that are in good form. You've got Mundy who can step out of the middle of the ground. Walters isn't playing at the moment, so get him back in that lineup. And their flexibility and Luke Ryan down back is really dominating at the moment. Ethan Hughes has gone to another level. So I'm really excited about Fremantle, and that's what you're talking about is they're not going to play finals this year, but you can really see the growth in what, you know, they've been able to do in this short period under Justin Longmuir, who has given great opportunity to these younger guys to stand up and say, hey, you've got to deliver in the midfield. We need a new look in here and some more flexibility. So right under Freo, I think they've been great to watch the last few weeks.
Yeah, they're a team that's...
last six.
I think we're all enjoying... I think we all like when a team starts to emerge, Jono, and starts to give a bit of life. And it's been a challenge for the Dockers for a little while. A new coach comes in and starts to breathe new oxygen into their system and their world, and you get a response. And it's on the back of enthusiasm and talent through young players. I think that's a really positive thing for the game when we see that stuff.
I think too, Harf, is that Justin Longmuir was probably the one that I... In all the coaches that changed last year, he was one I probably didn't know as much about. But I sat there going, well, I don't know what impact he will have at Fremantle if the three stars aren't, you know, dominating games. And I thought that Reece Shaw and Matty Nix, I knew Brett Ratton would go well with the Saints with his history. But the other two, I thought they would have more of an impact with their clubs quicker than what Justin Longmuir has. It's totally the other way. He's become the best change over the last 6 months in terms of coaching change. And you can see the direction and the way they really want to play is really strong. We've got the other two, unfortunately, Adelaide are in a rebuild. Matty Nix is going to have to go through that. And Reece Shaw now is having to probably have a really good look at things in terms of where North Melbourne go over the remainder of this year into the next 12 months as well, in terms of, you know, the structure of that lineup.
What do we do with the Kangas, Jono, while we're there? Is it time to just throw it all out and say, right, let's start again?
Oh, I think he's made some strong points this year, Reece Shaw. It just seems to be a bit more controlled in the way that they play. You look at the way, and this just goes back to your point before, Whitey, in terms of the bit of speed in the game. Last year, when he took over, they played with that much freedom, North Melbourne, and they absolutely dominated, I thought, under Reece Shaw. Players were flying around, and maybe it was the new coach factor. Maybe there wasn't as much structure and demand from Reece Shaw because of just taking over. This year, it just seems a little bit more sort of structured, and now you can see it starting to come in on Reece Shaw a little bit. He hasn't got that freedom in the way that he talks to the media and aspects of that because the pressure's just come on a little bit more. Just if he could just get back to allowing that freedom in the way that they play their football, and players thrive on that. They love that. You can see that it's the game was so structured for so many years that players now are getting a little bit more freedom in their movement, and they're actually starting to play a lot better footy. So the sides that have done that are sit at the top of the ladder. The ones that have tried to be still structured and set up that way rather than playing with a bit more flair, they're the ones that are really starting to struggle in terms of where the competition sits this year.
Yeah. So at the moment, North Melbourne have two first-round picks in this year's draft. They have their own pick and I think they have Melbourne's pick.
Yeah, they do.
If Ben Brown, if Ben Brown was to go, there's every chance they could have a minimum of three first-round picks. Now, is there another player on North Melbourne's list where they could get another first-round pick so they could potentially have four or five picks inside 25? Is it that dramatic, the renovation for this list? Or do they have to keep that core of senior players to help bring the next generation through? What would you do if you were Glenn Luff as list manager at North Melbourne or Reece Shaw?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I said the other week on Saturday Stretch that I don't think Ben Brown's a round one trade. I don't think he's worth that. And look, and then you can say, oh, he's past 3 years, he's kicked 60, 60 and 60. But I don't know. There's just it just seems like it's the edges come off Ben Brown a little bit in terms of his movement. So for Ben Brown to be successful, North Melbourne need speed in the game because he needs to come straight at the football. And when he does, he's unbelievable. He's nearly unstoppable because he's so big. He's got that early speed and he takes good marks. But when the game is controlled and slow, that affects Ben Brown. So the decision has to be made in terms of their style to help their best forward, or it becomes a question of, you know, where he sits in terms of their the way they want to play going forward, or he selects a team that plays with a bit of speed so that he can actually get going. But it's what that team will give up to get him. I think he's second round at the moment. I really do. So and you can still pick up a good play at second round. Let's be honest. Like there, you know, we get caught up in the first round, but there are still a number of good talented youngsters out there, or some mature players in other leagues that will have an impact for you if you pick them up as a second rounder.
Interesting. Let's have a quick look at tonight's game, boys. So we've got the Swans taking on the Giants, the Battle of the Bridge over there in Perth. Arden Blakey's back in, and Zach Foote's a new player for the Swans, gets a look. Alirelia is injured, Elijah Taylor is omitted, and Matthew Ling is omitted as well, Cameron's brother. Then we've got the Mumford Jacobs switcheroo for the Giants. Jacobs back in. Tom Hutchison comes in for Phil Davis as well. Tom Hutchison, new player. Jono, Sydney has struggled really well, heaps this year. They've just struggled. They've been okay in patches, but not really good enough for long enough to win games, it seems. And we know the Giants, they're middle of the road, but they seem to be building a little bit. This is a neutral venue, of course. How do you see this unfolding?
Yeah, the Giants should lock this one away. And I love the videos of the players that are making their debut. Another ripper from the Giants this week with Jeremy Cameron announcing in front of the group, I think, when Hutchinson had his girlfriend on a Zoom call or something like that. It was pretty cool. Like, I love the way that the Giants have done it well the last few years. They sit eighth at the moment, half. So they're just going to take the 4 points and walk away from this one. The Giants get themselves 24, get themselves back up to 28 points. You know, their percentage is healthy at 104, grow that a little bit as well. So they just need to start, you know, lock these ones away so they can start trying to position themselves for a top four finish, the Giants. And that's what they'll be striving for on the back of this. They should be able to, with the talent they've got, just lock Sydney away, who we know are in a real sort of transition phase with their list. And they'll have a crack, the Swans. They'll dig in, but I think the Giants will be too good.
They seem to be playing a bit more aggressively, the Swans. Whitey, we touched on it a couple of weeks ago, I think, and at the SCG, they're loving going through the middle of the ground and trying to score really quickly. Optus Stadium's a different beast. Again, would you expect to see a similar style from the Swans tonight to try and put a bit of pressure on the Giants?
Absolutely. And if you used, I've said this many times before, but if you put AFL football like horse racing, Sydney like playing on a good three. If you look at some of their best wins over the last few years, they've actually been away from the SCG where it's dewy and wet and slippery. They play well at Marvel Stadium. They had the win against Adelaide earlier on a fast deck at the Adelaide Oval. They win there quite a bit. They play their best footy when it's hard and fast, and they do tend to move the ball a bit quicker. So I think the Giants have got to be careful. But I think at the end of the day, they're the ones, as Jono said, with all to play for. Sydney don't. Now, that makes Sydney dangerous, but if the Giants get off to a good start, you'd think that Sydney would drop away. The Giants need a good win. I know what you're saying, Jono, about their percentage, but if you look at the teams around them, they need a 50, 60-point win somewhere to put themselves back into that mix of... Because it might be whether they make top four, not make top four, miss top eight. It will come down to percentage. So they need to control that a little bit and get that back up there to match the other teams that are around them on the ladder at the moment. So I think the Giants will be too good. But again, they've got to behave themselves, the Giants. They've got to play well. If they don't, Sydney will be dangerous if they move the ball quickly.
We'll see. That's tonight. Check your local guide. Sydney and the Giants. We're all tipping the Giants in that one. Jono, before we let you go, you've got other things happening tonight. What's going on with your dog?
Oh, yes, he's running this afternoon,
Afternoon.
Race three. He's in a final, so which is exciting, isn't it? He's won his last two, Half. He's in some sort of form. He's had a lot of injuries, our dog, King of Swing, and he's just started getting back and going, and he's had box one the last two starts and had a couple of nice little victories. So he'll start in the mix. I can say that. He'll be in the mix. Box one's the favourite. He's box two. So if he can jump out, we might be celebrating it to about 3:45 this afternoon, huh?
Well, there we go. 3:44, in fact, is jump time. King of Swing.
Yes, but I'm giving him the 30 seconds, and then we can celebrate at 3:45.
$6 in the early markets at tab.com.au on the fix. $1.75 to place. King of Swing. Oh, the two box. I'm concerned about the black and white. I'm concerned about that, Jono.
I've never liked the black and white half. But
no, I know.
Today it'll work in our favour. And, well, hopefully. Yeah, you never know, mate. But we're in with a shot. That's the main thing.
Absolutely. Good luck to you. Race 3, number 2, King of Swing. We're cheering at home on the Breakfast Club today at Sandown Park. A 12-race card. Big feature races at Sandown Park tonight, or today and tonight. Good luck to you, Jono. Nice to chat as always. Look forward to touching base with you next week on the Breakfast Club.
Good on you, boys. See ya. Have a good weekend.
Catch Jono on Fox Footy and the Saturday stretch, as well as the games. He's doing a great job. Is Brad Johnson. Great to have him part of the team. It's 21 to